Before we start, just a warning that this episode contains reference to sexual assault and suicide. If you're affected by anything in this program, there are some links to support services on the Full Story page right now, and we will include some information at the end of the episode. I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. Last Friday, the ABC revealed that the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, various senators, and the Australian Federal Police had been informed of a historical rape allegation against a current cabinet minister. Yesterday, that minister, Attorney General Christian Porter, came forward.
The allegations appear to be about a period in early 1988 during an end-of-school debating competition at Sydney University. I was 17 years old and the other person was 16. It was a long time ago. I'd always remembered it as a happy time.
He firmly denied the allegation, stating that it simply never happened.
But I can say categorically that what has been put in various forms in allegations simply did not happen.
Both the New South Wales Police and the Australian Federal Police have confirmed they will not be proceeding with criminal investigations on this matter due to a lack of admissible evidence. But there have been calls for the Prime Minister to set up an independent inquiry to investigate these claims. Today, the PM's response to historical allegations of rape. It's Thursday, the 4th of March. So, Murph, we found out last week about an allegation that an unnamed cabinet minister in 1998 raped a woman who was then 16. He was also quite young and wasn't in federal politics at the time, we learned. Can you walk me through how this allegation came to light?
Well, she started reaching out, as I've been reporting this issue over the last several days, I've discovered this, she started reaching out to her oldest friends, people who knew her at the time that the alleged incident is said to have taken place.
Catherine Murphy is Guardian Australia's political editor.
She began telling her friends about this allegation. She was seeking help and guidance from her friendship group about her own very traumatic memories of what had occurred at that time, but also recollections from friends about what had happened or what had been said, what might have been witnessed at that point in time. So that's June 2019. I think encouraged by her friends, she's got a very tight circle of friends and they are really fantastic people. She was encouraged to take her complaint to the New South Wales Police, because that was the state in which the assault is alleged to have occurred.
And what did they do?
The New South Wales Police set up a strike force to investigate. Those processes were put in train. She was also, I think, dealing with authorities in South Australia. But just as she was about to complete her final witness statements, sadly, she took her own life. Mm. So the inquiries were not concluded. In the days before she took her own life, she had established contact, I believe, with the New South Wales Police to signal to them that she no longer wanted to proceed with the complaint. Mm. People who are very close to her, friends of hers, have different theories about why that occurred. But of course, these are theories. Mm. Nobody truly knows what's in the mind of another person. But anyway, that they are the sad facts of the case as we understand them.
So this story was known to friends and the authorities for some time. Why isn't it in the media now? How did it come to light in the past week or so?
Yeah, well, in the past week or so, a letter composed by some of her friends to three politicians, Scott Morrison, P Penny Wong and Sarah Hanson-Young.
Mm.
This letter, which I've read, it's written by friends, but it outlines the woman's recollections of the alleged sexual assault that appeared first in the ABC. Subsequently, the politicians who were the recipients of this letter have made statements about their knowledge of the allegations, their knowledge of this particular piece of correspondence, and how they themselves dealt with the woman, because Senator Wong and Sarah Hanson-Young both had interactions with the woman.
Mm, so seems like some people in the media, several politicians, including the PM, have received this letter, they've seen this letter. How did the PM respond to this fairly shocking allegation contained in this letter that a member of his own cabinet is accused of rape?
Yes. Well, obviously, these are really grave circumstances, and it gained wide coverage and currency over the weekend, over Saturday and Sunday. The Prime Minister hadn't been seen in public until the Monday, which is when he held a press conference in Sydney at Kirribilli House.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Now, the purpose of the press conference was to release the long-anticipated Royal Commission into aged care.
Mm.
It was always also going to be an opportunity to put questions about this other matter.
At this point.
Prime Minister, have you asked the Cabinet Minister who was accused of or the subject of allegations aired by the ABC of rape allegations, have you asked him if he denies those allegations?
Yes, I have, and he absolutely does. Categorically.
That occurred
last week. Last week I became aware of a set of documents that had been circulated to, I think, four individuals. I was told that I was one of those individuals at the time. My officer, I hadn't received those materials.
So at this point, we knew that the Prime Minister had received the letter the week before, but there's been a lot of discussion that the PM may have known about all of this much earlier. Did we learn anything about that?
Well, he said at one point, Laura, that he was aware of rumours.
What have you heard, if not of substance?
Only rumours of an ABC investigative journalist making some inquiries.
Around the time that Four Corners were making inquiries about a program that was broadcast last year about the very toxic work culture in Parliament House.
I tend to not pay attention to rumours.
Was this the trigger? It was a
rumour. So at some point last year, the Prime Minister was aware of rumours that somebody from the ABC was asking questions about something. He wasn't quite sure what, because these were rumours and he's not really interested in rumours. He wasn't really clear what the questions were about or who they were about by his own account, but he was aware that something was kind of around, was sort of his, you know, that's a summary of what he said.
Position to do so.
When you were sent those documents and you read through them, what was your reaction?
To send it to the federal police to ensure that I understood in a country where the rule of law applies, that they could be properly assessed.
Also, strangely, even though he was given this correspondence by friends of the woman who has made the sexual assault allegation against a member of his cabinet.
Sorry, can I just clarify? You haven't actually read through these documents yourself. Given the the seriousness of these allegations, why haven't you read through these documents?
I've been briefed on the contents of them, and it was appropriate, as the Commissioner himself advised all of us in the Parliament, to refer any allegations to the proper authority.
He hadn't read that. He hadn't read that material. And so that too was quite strange. If you've got correspondence in your office that's making very serious, grave, potentially criminal allegations about a member of the cabinet, why the Prime Minister wouldn't read that primary material was also a bit of a mystery.
Let's break this down a tiny bit. From what you've just said, it sounds like the PM knew something of this matter last year when he was asked about it by the media. surely at that time it would have triggered some concern and attention from the Prime Minister, even if, as he said, it was only rumours, whatever that means.
Whatever that means is really the issue there, Laura. What does that mean? What did the Prime Minister hear last year? It was entirely unclear from what he said, what he had heard last year. But look, yes, if he was aware of the general thrust of these allegations, which are obviously incredibly serious, the lack of curiosity on the part of the Prime Minister was startling. Why you would not at that time seek to assure yourself that there was nothing to these rumours, why you wouldn't ask questions. I think it had most people at the press conference and people watching on shaking their heads with a certain amount of disbelief.
So, Murph, regardless of what Morrison knew and when and what rumours were said and when, these allegations are pretty public knowledge now, and we know that Morrison has spoken to the minister at the centre of these allegations. What has happened there?
Well, again, we're relying on Scott Morrison's account of this because the minister has not given an account at this point. But the Prime Minister says that he spoke to the minister.
Minister, have you asked the cabinet minister who was accused of or the subject of allegations aired by the ABC of rape allegations? Have you asked him if he denies those allegations?
Yes, I have, and he absolutely does.
Categorically, that occurred last week.
I became aware.
It was words to the effect of a total denial on the part of the minister who has been accused of this assault.
And did Morrison say that he believed him, this minister, who we now know to be Attorney General Christian Porter?
My immediate attention.
Do you believe the allegation to be false?
Basically what he said was,
that is a matter for the police.
This is a police matter.
I'm not the commissioner of police.
Though, is it?
No, I'm sorry, it is actually. Yeah. It is. Allegations of criminal conduct should be dealt with by competent and authorised agencies.
You must believe him, otherwise he wouldn't be in your cabinet.
Of actually answering. It is the police in a country where you're governed by the rule of law that determine the veracity of any allegations of this nature.
He sort of outsourced his judgment to the police, in essence. That might be slightly harsh, but I don't think very harsh. I think that's the truth of it. He has said, the minister's told me he didn't do it. He's not guilty, Your Honour. Me, Scott Morrison, I'm reflecting that to you, reporters, and I'm saying that I'm not the judge of the world. The police need to deal with this.
So what actions are you going to take as the Prime Minister to send a message that you are looking into this situation?
By referring it to the Federal Police, which is exactly what I and the other three persons who received this information did. Now, it is with the Federal Police. There are other jurisdictions that potentially...
Is that true? Is this a matter for the police?
First of all, to my knowledge, the AFP doesn't have jurisdiction over this particular crime. Rape, sexual assault is a matter for state police forces, and these cases are prosecuted in the states in which they occur. It would be very difficult for state police to prosecute a rape case without a complainant. And that is the difficulty, that the woman who has made the complaint is sadly no longer with us. So the idea that police would bring a case without a complainant, it stretches credulity that police would do that. And very promptly, the New South Wales Police have made it clear they will not do that. They have issued a statement saying, we have sought legal advice on this, and as far as we're concerned, we can't proceed. It's case closed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the police cannot be the only arbiters of what is true and what is not true in relation to this case. Prime Ministers have to exercise judgment all the time about whether something is reasonable or not, whether colleagues surrounding him or her are performing their duties adequately or whether they face problems that would compromise their duties in some shape or form. So it's not just a matter of police establishing the veracity of 30-year-old allegations or not, and that's the end of it. That's a ludicrous proposition. The Prime Minister also has to exercise the judgments that we expect Prime Ministers to make.
So you won't be ordering an inquiry on this?
I'm not the police force. I have given it to the police to investigate.
Question for the Health Minister, if possible.
Morrison was asked in this presser if he would act on these allegations and whether he would launch an inquiry. And he once again stated that this is a matter for the police. Can you step through what could actually be done by the PM, according to the experts?
Well, several things could happen here. Now, a number of legal experts have said an independent judicial or quasi-judicial inquiry could examine all of the material. We have obviously a statement from the now deceased woman in her own words. We have testimony from friends, a number of people who have very clear recollections about what she said to them over many conversations. So there are people who can give an account of the woman's allegations, and there's material of the woman giving her own account of the allegations. An independent process would also provide a level of procedural fairness to the minister who faces these allegations. If there was an independent inquiry process, the minister would have an opportunity to defend his position forthrightly and in some depth. And then whomever was charged with conducting that inquiry would either make findings or would say, it's impossible to make findings because of the very sad circumstances of this case. But that would be closure of some type.
Next, the cabinet minister faces the media.
Everyone, the attorneys will make a statement and then it's happy to answer all of your questions.
So Murph, yesterday Attorney General Christian Porter came forward and identified himself as the accused cabinet minister and firmly denied the allegations. Can you just walk me through what he said?
Yeah, well, it was an extraordinary press conference. He was clearly distressed and emotional.
I have been subject to the most wild, intense, unrestrained series of accusations that I can remember in modern Australian politics. Maybe that's the new normal. I hope for everyone's sake it's not.
He said that they knew one another as teenagers. He gave some context around how they knew one another. He insists that they didn't sleep together.
I hadn't had any contact from that person at all, to the best of my recollection, in the 33 years since that time in January 1988.
What about that time?
They weren't involved sexually and they were known to one another in a broader group of people.
But I can say categorically that what has been put in various forms in allegations simply did not happen.
He then categorically denied the allegations that she had made against him. There was no room for ambiguity. And he also then went on to suggest that media outlets covering the story hadn't put these allegations to him. He said, well, it wasn't just the media. He also suggested that Scott Morrison hadn't given him the letter from the woman and that media outlets had not explained these allegations prior to publishing them.
Before last Friday, all I can say is that I had heard, I think about November last year, a rumour that was being spread by a small number of people that I had somehow offended against someone decades ago in a way that was never specified to me.
He suggested that he'd been in the dark about this stuff for quite a long period of time. He mentioned during the press conference that he'd had a dinner with an old friend of his, I think it was last November, in which she had put to him in very, very indirect terms that people were putting about suggestions about him and an incident many, many years ago. According to the AG's account in the press conference, that was the first and only knowledge that he had about these allegations, that he'd had no contact with the woman who had levelled the allegations and that that they had not been explained to him clearly.
All of this has happened and I have never been contacted in any substantive form by anyone.
So basically no in-depth understanding of these allegations, just kind of whispers in the past couple of months, it sounds like.
Yeah, rumours, whispers, similar language to Scott Morrison, really.
What about the other really big question that everyone has, his role going forward? What did he say?
And I'm sure that you will ask, so I will state to you, I am not standing down or aside.
Well, he said he intended to remain as Attorney General. He foreshadowed that he would take a couple of weeks' break because he made several references to his mental health taking a battering in this whole controversy, but that his intention was to return as Attorney General.
If I stand down from my position as Attorney General because of an allegation about something that simply did not happen, then any person in Australia can lose their career, their job, their life's work, based on nothing more than an accusation that appears in print.
And he sort of made the case that if attorney generals or really anyone in public life was to be felled by an unproven allegation, then the rule of law was basically over. We were in a new mob rule environment where processes that are very important to first law officers of the land no longer applied. So he sort of made this a test of his own portfolio in a way that he needed to remain.
My guess is that if I were to resign and that set a new standard, well, there wouldn't be much need for an Attorney General anyway because there would be no rule of law left to protect in this country.
Did he comment on this push for an independent inquiry?
Yes, that was put to him. Porter's response to that was twofold. He said, basically, that's a decision for others. It's not really my decision. But here's my view on it. It's a bad idea because I could never disprove the allegations that have been levelled against me. In essence, he suggests having suggested that the rule of law and process was very important, he suggested that an independent investigation would not deliver justice because he would have to disprove an allegation, a 30-year-old allegation, and his suggestion was that it would be impossible for him to be given procedural fairness in such a process.
What would I say in front of that inquiry? What would that inquiry ask me to do? To disprove something that didn't happen 33 years ago. And I honestly don't know what I would say to that.
Just basically said, I can't get a fair result out of this process. Now, he was pushed on this because, of course, independent inquiries, when such allegations are levelled, are very commonplace in this day and age. They happen in corporations, they happen in institutions, and in fact, an independent inquiry process happened in the High Court at Porter's behest when there were allegations levelled against one of the High Court justices. So he was pushed on why is an independent process good in some circumstances and not other circumstances? And the AG's answer to that was that in the Dyson Heydon investigation, that this was a workplace matter, that in essence, because there were testimonies that workplace standards had been violated, workplace norms had been violated, that triggered a process of resolving that, which was an independent inquiry. Mm. He suggested that sort of process was not applicable to his own circumstances.
So he encouraged you to come forward, and do you have the full backing of the Prime Minister?
I spoke with the Prime Minister this morning, and that full backing is there. I asked the Prime Minister.
So far, it seems like Morrison has kind of made no more comment or held firm that no more action is needed on his part. How has this been received, both Porter's revelations and Morrison standing by his comments on Monday, it seems like?
Yeah, well, it's too soon to say what the Prime Minister will do. I think the Prime Minister's disposition to date has been to back in Porter. Perhaps he will continue on that course. Perhaps he will continue to resist all calls for an independent process to resolve this. Perhaps that'll be the case. We'll have to wait and see. The reception to it, I think there are a lot of people still in the Parliament, around the Parliament, who believe that an independent inquiry is the only valid course. And I think we'll see the calls for that inquiry continue.
So, Murph, it seems like, from what you've told me, that Morrison has kind of pursued this strategy of distancing himself from any in-depth knowledge of this. He's only heard about the rumours, and also distancing himself from the responsibility to act on this in any way. What do you make of that? Is this the way that a Prime Minister should go about addressing such a serious allegation about someone within his own party and his own cabinet?
Look, with proper respect, and I mean that, to the fact that this is complicated, there are complications here. This is a genuinely difficult, you'd call it a wicked problem if you were talking about policy. It is difficult. That said, though, it is very, I can't fathom why the Prime Minister is being so passive about these issues. I think there are moments where the public rightly expects leaders to do tough things, to stand up and make complicated, difficult decisions about what's right. I think that goes with the job description. I think if you say Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, if that's your job description, you need to make good on the job description, which is doing the complicated, difficult things. And I also think there's a pattern here that we've emerged, both with the terrible Brittany Higgins story and with this one, that the Prime Minister wants to keep himself at a step removed from you know, the terrible facts of these stories. And I think that's strange. The message that sends to the community is genuinely troubling. I think we've had a period where governments have more or less competently managed a very serious crisis, the coronavirus pandemic. The data tells us that trust is returning to government. You know, it's like off a low base, but trust is returning to institutions and processes and politicians even, dare we say. And if you won't exercise leadership, if you won't exercise responsibility, if you want to cast yourself as a sort of strange journeyman in your own prime ministership, just bobbing around with events, then there's a price to be paid for that in terms of your standing with the public and whether or not people view you as a person who will lead in complicated and difficult circumstances.
We've already seen a bit of that price, right? There was a poll that came out this week that showed that many people feel that the government has put their own interests ahead of women.
Yeah, well, this is problematic, I think, because what perhaps the Prime Minister doesn't quite realise is that certainly women watching these events, watching these horrible stories, have their own life experiences that they bring to how these events are interpreted. There are a lot of women in the country, inside and outside politics, watching these events very closely. People who wouldn't necessarily normally tune into a political story. This cuts across, it translates out into the broader community. People get a sense of this. And I think particularly women watching this bring their own interpretations and life experiences to it. And I think it is very dangerous for a prime minister to cast himself as a sort of passive onlooker in very serious instances like this, because the message that sends to the women of Australia is, I'm not listening. I'm not taking this seriously. I don't want to be involved in this. I want to be a step removed from that. And I think every woman in Australia has experienced at some point in her life, over very trivial things or very large things, women have experienced themselves the sensation, the experience of having something to say and having a man not listen. And I think that everybody watching this brings that perspective to bear. So I think, I don't know why the Prime Minister doesn't really fathom that from the way he's conducting himself, that there are sort of bigger issues that are sort of pressing down on this response culturally, societally, across generations. I don't really know why he doesn't sort of get the context in which he's operating in and what women of all ages, of all life experiences, of all voting intentions, of all professions want men to do in circumstances like this, men who are in a position to make change, men who are in a position of power. They want men to use that power in order to make society more equal for women. And look, polls come and go. People make judgments week to week in polls for different reasons. Different backdrops inform their decisions. But I think it's been very interesting in our Guardian Essential poll that where the Prime Minister's losing ground in the trust stakes is with Australian women. And I think he would be very wise to think very, very deeply and carefully about that.
Murph, thank you so much for walking me through that.
Thank you, Junior. Always a pleasure.
In Australia, support for sexual assault survivors is available at 1-800-RESPECT. Children and young adults, parents and teachers can contact the Kids Helpline on 1800 55 1800. And adult survivors of child sexual assault can seek help at the Blue Knot Foundation. The Crisis Support Service in Australia is Lifeline at 131114. We've put some links to these support services on the Full Story page. Okay, that's it for today. Thanks to Catherine Murphy for her time. You can read her reporting and analysis of this story, plus the latest news at theguardian.com, and there are some links on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Beta and Joe Koning. Our executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. Okay, catch you tomorrow.